Oh, man.
Okay, we're going to have to do that part again. Okay.
Good times.
Good times. Anyway, passwords. Speaking of passwords, I just got a little email from my FanDuel.
Oh.
That was like, your account has been locked because of too many attempts. I was like, wow, I haven't touched this in like 3 weeks. So I had to email them back and be like, so this wasn't me.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
And they're like, don't do anything. You have two-factor authentication. I was like, cool.
That's why that's there, even though I hate it.
No, I hate it.
Because earlier
when we
were trying to log into the Zoom, it just kept being like, we get it, but is it you? I'm like, yeah, it's me. Okay,
yeah, it's
press
me.
This number.
Press this button.
Done.
No,
but
log
is it
into your
you?
Phone. Is it you?
Yes, it's me.
I would like to procure the bag. I want to be a rich bitch. Penthouse store man. Money, 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 rich bitch. Hey. Give me that bag. Rich bitch.
Yes. You're so rich.
Pay me.
We're professionals.
We're giving.
Well, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us again on How to Be a Rich Bitch. Sarah, how have you been a rich bitch?
Well, I mean, I can't see myself in the monitor, but I think my hair is giving. So that's partial. I think it's giving
today. It's giving.
Yeah, right?
It's
giving. It feels a little different today. A little bigger.
It's giving like that girl from Glow who played Jackie, who was like not rich but had a limo.
Okay, well.
One of my faves.
Oh yes! I loved that show.
You and she are basically twins. Like,
okay, cool.
Every time I watch that show, I'm like, it's Sarah Seeds.
Okay, cool. I'd rather
we're manifesting
them,
that.
Maybe. Anyway, so thank you. I like Alison Brie. Is that who that Alison Brie's done?
I love her. It's not her.
Okay,
but
just kidding.
Also love her.
Okay,
also Betty Gilpin.
Also Betty Gilpin.
Yes.
Anyway, how
I could go off on Betty Gilpin
okay,
forever.
How
so anyway, how have you been rich, bitch?
Let's talk about that. Well, I wrapped the movie.
Yes.
That was honestly
a very long day. You wrapped at like 2:30 a.m.
Three. Well, okay, I'll give the... Hold on. I don't want the crew to come for me. It was two whatever. It was right on the money. But I didn't get home till like 3 something. But they sent.
Right.
They got me a car and I left and it was awesome. And I have to say that it's such a beautiful piece of work. And working across from Steph Dawson, she was just such a great co-star with me. And we were sisters, really. By the end, it felt that way. And honestly, because the takes were so very long, because it was very theatrical, it was very much like a theater piece. It's very much a character-driven, two people at a table, incredible piece. There is a, by literally take two of my long take, I was in it. I was in it to win it. She was giving me everything. I was giving her everything, which goes to show actors, sometimes it's really important when you're on set, and it was very important, that even if the camera's not on you, give just as much. Yeah, maybe don't sob and have the snot coming down and you're giving.
Pulling a Viola Davis.
Yeah, literally. I think I was sobbing so much at one of my takes that I was like, oh God, I'm messy. And I didn't even care because I was in. But my point is the reason I was able to get there is because she gave it to me when she was off camera and I did the same for her. I was in it. And I wasn't like on my phone like, yeah. And then I said, what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so disrespectful.
Have you seen that happen on set before?
Yes, I've been on sets before.
Oh my
where,
God.
People don't give anything when they're not on camera.
Wow.
Like, it's really self-serving.
That's so selfish.
Yes. So that goes into my rich bitch thing is, like, because everyone gave themselves to this project and it really was a collaborative effort, kind of like how me and you really truly give everything for what we do. Like, we don't just half-ass anything. That's really rich bitch behavior. And I felt that on set, that every single person, whether it was the incredible DP, whether it was the AD keeping us on track, Dev, producer extraordinaire, you know, everybody that was involved, the director, oh, fantastic, Mac, love you. Everyone involved was just giving 100% and was not making it just about them at all. It was just so collaborative and so incredible. And I think that's really rich bitch behavior. And I think all we can do is uplift each other. And the best way to do that is give 100%. So that's kind of like my rich bitch moment.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, like, I know people are... like, I guess more accustomed to like easing back when they're not on.
Yeah.
But really, like, what it comes down to is just like, do your job.
Do your freaking
job.
Do
your job. It doesn't matter if you're on camera. Do your job.
No. Like,
are you still part of it?
That's literally your job.
No.
Yeah. And I heard this really wonderful story about Tom Cruise, actually, that when he's not on camera, he doesn't go to his trailer and have to stand and do the da 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 da, because some people apparently do that. I think that's really. He stays and he's like, yeah. Yeah, and is in because he wants the best.
Of course.
And that's a movie star. I'm sorry. I know he's...
Yeah, he's problematic.
We have a lot of things
in and
that
of itself,
say about him.
But
as an actor, as a professional, I remember his outburst when we were coming out of lockdown and someone wasn't following COVID protocols and he just lost it on set and was like,
I would too.
I loved that.
That was relatable content at the time.
That was being professional. It was keeping people safe because he knows he's a producer as well, usually on everything.
Well, and also the movies that he makes, there's like tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes.
Lawsuits, deaths, on the line. Everything. Yeah.
It's just like you have too much to lose to fuck off like that.
Yeah.
Like I could understand if it was like, you know, a free thing that you're doing that everyone's shoestringing together.
Yeah.
But even that to me is still not excusable because it's everyone's time and energy and fervor for the project that they're doing. And you're just shitting all over it.
Yeah.
Like I will never understand that.
Never. When I shot the Diner pilot, which now is entering, that's also Rich Bitch. We're handing it off to FX now.
Yes.
So it's the next phase and we're getting it closer to sign, seal, delivered. But when I was producing that, one of the main things I said was, regardless of whatever anyone's vaccine status, we are testing every single morning. Because this was still in the window of, like, we need to be doing that.
Yeah.
And we weren't even in Manhattan. We were in Long Island.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit more lenient. But I still...
All the more reason.
Yeah. Don't get me started. So, loved it. But, yes. Thank God. Because there were moments where we had so many extras for the diner scenes. And, like, the big diner, full diner scenes when it's busy. And... we swabbed everyone before they got in, and my God, there was a dude. We swabbed him, positive. We were like, stay there. We were like, got another one, swabbed again, positive. I was like, sorry, sir, you have to go home. He would have contaminated every single person in that room.
That would have shut down production.
And there were some elderly folks in there. There were people with comorbidities. There were people with, I mean, I was in there. Like, everybody was in there. Like, we would have all had a problem. So I'm just saying, be a team player. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's it. Rich bitch. Be a team player. Keep everyone afloat.
Team player.
Yes. Yeah, so how about you? How have you been a rich biatch?
A rich biatch.
No.
You know.
You know? I know.
Still,
do I know?
Still in the throes of doing all the things with work. So that has been a whole process.
I know.
Worth it, but just a lot of digging for old paperwork that I never thought I would need ever again. Thank God I still have it.
Does that bring up anything? I just wanted to ask you about that.
What do you mean?
Like when you're digging up old... jobs or old years or whatever, does that bring
up bad memories?
good or bad? Like, does it?
I mean, for the most part, like the place of employment in question, good memories.
Great.
I really enjoyed working for them.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lovely experience in a beautiful place, a historical landmark. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Good.
So yes, that. Cool. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it, you know, I know you hate when I talk about this, but like, she's so skinty right now. This jacket I wore at my sister's wedding in 2018.
Why do I hate when you talk about this? When am I ever like
it's,
you?
It's my vegan.
Oh, well, okay. I just don't like when you say bad things about yourself.
No,
you
no, I know. But like, instead of being a fat cunt, I'm actually fitting into, to put a finer point on it.
Yeah.
This blazer I have not worn since my sister's wedding in 2018.
Yeah.
And she can button. I haven't been able to button this.
Oh, that's amazing.
For so long. And so maybe it's not rich bitch, but it's skinny bitch.
Yeah, well, skinny bitches can be rich bitches. You know
what I
mean?
Can't wait until the rest of me is just hanging off of my cheekbones.
We're like...
And everyone's concerned.
It's like, baby girl.
But also with that said, I've kind of made the weird decision to either back off of and or quit the Zempies entirely. Mm. TBD, not sure yet.
Okay.
It's been a string of weeks of not feeling very well.
Yeah.
For the majority of the time. And I think I have... obviously, like, done what I needed to do enough.
Yes.
That I can take it from here. It's still a very weird decision to be making because I have such severe body dysmorphia that it's like taking back my power with that in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then I think my last thing for being a rich bitch actually happened today, blazer withstanding, on my walk over here, because I walk here from my office, it's not that far. the entirety of the perimeter around Rockefeller Center and the subsequent blocks near it were all completely shut down, blockaded off, police activity, everything.
Oh.
Because there was presidential things happening, I believe. I think that's why.
Oh, yeah.
There's like 25 there's like presidents here today. I don't know.
I mean, the ones that are alive are here.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Because
I think, I don't know how many are still with us.
I don't
actually
know.
I don't either.
It's Carter.
He's gone.
Oh, that's right. No.
Recently.
Did he?
Okay, hold on.
We're
going to
fact check this. We're going to fact check this.
We don't have a fact checker. We are, and obviously
I know he's. I know he's old as hell. He's like 700 years old.
I don't want to say it and be wrong.
He's giving Noah. He's giving
Moses.
He's 99.
Okay. I think he's still alive. Yep, he's still alive. Yep,
thought so. So
what
Carter,
an angel of the Lord.
Carter, Clinton,
yeah.
Bush 2.
No, oh, I don't think he's gone.
No.
Okay, hold on.
GW? GH is gone.
Oh, yeah,
GW
is alive. Yes, GW's still here. He's
and Obama's.
Painting. Yeah, Obama's.
And then he shall, who shall not be named.
And Joe Biden.
Right.
Yeah.
Forgot about him. Yeah. So six presidents are still alive. Wah, wah, wah. Wow, anyway, man. So all of that to say.
Where are we?
I don't know what's happening. All of
they're
that,
all 80 and up.
Yes, all of that
except
to say.
Obama. Literally, they're all 80 and up except for Obama.
I miss her.
Me too.
So anyway, on my walk over here, all of that was going on. Mm-hmm. And it tied back into, there's a chapter in my book about running into the NYPD because that area was blockaded off
right.
because of the Christmas tree lighting
oh, yes.
at mm-hmm. Rockefeller Center. And I just needed to get to H&M because I was about to start chemo. My hair was going to fall out. And I wanted a fucking hat. I wanted like a $10 hat yeah. from H&M. I don't know why I was hyperfixated on going there, ADHD. But I
don't know ADHD.
I don't know. But that's where I wanted to go. And I got into a fight with them and I was being a bitch and mm-hmm. totally not a great scenario.
Sure.
Same
I do
thing
love that scenario about
happened
them.
Today. Where I was going the same route to try and get across the street and everything was blockaded off. And instead of having a full meltdown, I just was like, how far down do I have to go until I can cross? And they're like, just go back around to 49th Street. I was like, great, thank you
and
so
like,
much.
Here.
Thank you, right
I'll
this way.
Yeah. Climb on.
So I controlled my impulse to
great.
Scream at the NYPD today because of an inconvenience that was happening.
Aww.
Because of political goings on in the Rockefeller Center area of Manhattan.
How very...
And that's growth.
It is growth. It really is. Like, that's fantastic. Because the last thing, really, do we need is to bring more bullshit in this earth. And everyone's trying to get somewhere. And
right.
no one's choosing for this to happen today. Like, I didn't
nobody
choose for
wanted
all
this.
Of them to be
the only
here
reason, the only reason why I knew in the first place is because I am a psychopath and I have the Citizen app. And
oh,
the Citizen app tells
that.
You
Ooh.
Everything.
Ooh, I had to
and there were,
it.
Like, presidential whatever activity of rocket. And I was like, oh, my God. And leaving work, it didn't even occur to me.
Oh,
didn't even
snap.
Occur to me.
Yeah.
Until I got there, and I was like, oh, man.
Oh, man. I'm glad that wherever, I'm not sharing where I live, but I'm just saying I'm further, I'm west more. So I didn't even notice or think about it because yeah. I was past the.
Well, my office is east. I had to.
That sucks.
And I
didn't
just
even
was
think
like,
about it either.
I just was like, I should have taken the train. I should have taken the train.
Yeah. It's going to be the most unhinged episode of all time.
Unhinged.
Unhinged.
It's fine. Everything's
I love it.
Great.
Everything's cool.
So yeah,
everything
so that's how
awesome.
I've been a rich bitch. But also, like, you know, just living the day to day, making the things happen.
We
you
have
know?
To.
Yeah, working on the pitch deck. Looks great.
Looks great.
Obsessed
yeah,
with
too.
The changes.
Yeah.
Obsessed.
Obsessy.
But yeah.
Great. I think whatever you choose to do, and that's another thing, a rich bitch, the thing to do is like to go back to the Ozempi of it all. The whole point of bodily autonomy is that it's your decision. So
yeah.
I think that's very rich bitch for you to say, I'm probably going to stop it or I won't. I don't know.
Yeah.
Figuring it out.
Well, and also too, like I'm very transparent about things that I have done to and also for my body because
sure.
I think it's important to talk about. Because
that creates less shame
it
for everybody.
It creates less shame.
You,
like,
me, everyone.
Like I started the Ozempies in December. It has been a long journey
it's
of
worked,
figuring
though.
It out. It has worked.
Truly worked. Like one time I was at your apartment and you
it has worked.
Turned around and I was like,
where did she go?
Damn it. I was like, right, Carrie. He's like, I don't know. And then he slipped through the
gone.
Wooden, yeah, the
yep.
between the wooden slats.
But
yeah.
also, like, I'm super open about the fact that I've had two hair transplants in the last 8 years.
Transplant.
And I'm planning on,
I don't know.
I'm planning on having a third this year and
great.
Definitely a fourth in the future because I'm a big advocate of, like, buying the body you want. Buy the body you want.
Buy her. Get her on sale.
Because that's what science is there for.
Yeah.
And I'm going to utilize it to be youthful and beautiful forever.
Mm-hmm. And I
get a look at this
cosine.
Face, everybody. This is what I'm going to look like when I'm 150 years old.
And this is what I'm going to look like next year. No, I was kidding. I haven't.
And I'll also do that, too. Like, take this
oh, yeah,
off,
yeah.
take that on. Like,
I'll
whatever.
Be very open
it's
about
fine.
Everything. I always
I'm
am.
I'm going to be Jane Fonda.
Oh, work. Can't we all be? I want to be a Jane Fonda.
One should only could only
I love
be
that
so
video
lucky.
Of her and Miss Frizzle. What's her name? I love her so much. That's all I know her growing up.
Miss Frizzle.
Oh my! What's her name? Who plays Miss Frizzle? Who's they're on that show together. They're both
Lily Tomlin.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Voice
God?
From the bag. God.
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 God, I love Lily Tomlin.
Lily.
Really quick tangent.
Yeah.
If you have not seen Big Business starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
I've never seen it.
1986, I believe. It is one of the greatest movies of all time. It is very divisive in the sense that you either know it and have it memorized,
uh-huh,
or you've never heard of it and you have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's the one.
It is so good.
Maybe it's going to be at Alamo.
I personally think it is more quotable than Mean Girls.
I can believe that.
And I mean that from the depths of my soul.
Wow. On Wednesdays We Were Pink. Wow.
On Wednesdays We Were Pink. Except for in...
Damn, Africa.
Except for in Big Business, Lily Tomlin says, have you got your brains and your balls in your briefcase?
Wow.
It's just...
I love that.
80s zingers.
Okay. Death Becomes Her, though.
I have only seen that movie once. Okay. I loved it.
Okay.
Now a warning.
Yeah, now. But, I did the scene from that for acting class. It's one of my faves.
But yeah, so good. Anyway, didn't mean to interrupt.
Sorry.
But Lily Tomlin.
I have no idea
and Jane Fonda.
What I was even going to say. Oh, there's a video
plastic
of them.
Surgery.
Yeah. But there's a video of them where Jane Fonda's like, they're being open about everything. And Jane Fonda's like, oh, wow. How many times have I been? And Lily Tomlin's like, how many times have you been arrested, Jane, for protesting? And Jane's like, oh, I don't know. I don't even know. And like, I was like,
she's
what a
so
badass
amazing.
Thing to say.
I love
to
her.
Even know that you have been arrested probably
so many times.
So many
you
times,
can't count.
You're like, a lot.
I remember seeing an interview, I think it was Graham Norton, where they talk about the first time she was arrested, which was like in the 60s. And there's this black and white photo of her looking like an absolute dish.
Oh, she's been a dish.
Just like in handcuffs and like, her shirt's open and she's just like...
She's like fighting.
She's like, arrest me.
Yeah, I think she's an icon. And
no,
we
she's
need
amazing.
More of her.
I love her so much and it will be a sad day.
Oh, don't... Yeah, no.
Not putting that out there.
No.
But it will be. It
no,
will, in fact,
she
be.
Is everything.
Yes.
She is the moment. She always has been.
Always has been.
Yeah, I love so many iconic women standing up for allies and standing up for... Like Dolly Parton has been an ally since the day she was born.
Yeah.
And Dolly Parton's another example of somebody who consistently, I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. I'm sure we have, because who hasn't talked about Dolly Parton on an everyday basis? But I feel like she's another example of a woman of a certain age that's always been open about everything she does, open about everyone she knows and who she supports and who she is. And she puts her money where her mouth is. So bless these ladies. I can only dream of being
bless
that iconic.
And you know what? If Jane Fonda and Dolly Parton... And Lily Tomlin can have work done, so can I.
You and you and me and you and me and you.
And all of us.
And all of us. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to ever do. If I do something, I'll bring it up. I haven't yet, but that doesn't mean I won't. Also, I use retinol and stay out of the sun.
I'm going to bathe in La Mer just like J-Lo.
Oh, yes, La Mer.
Not to get into the J-Lo of it all.
Oh, it's fine.
But it's,
she looks,
it's my favorite thing on TikTok right now.
She looked good.
TikTok is dragging her to
Why?
Filth.
Why is everyone dragging her?
Well, because she made that movie for $20 million of her own money, and it's terrible. I haven't seen it. Disclosure, have not seen it. I don't know. Do not have an opinion about it.
On a scale of one to Glitter, how terrible.
I loved Glitter.
I know. You're the only one who's seen it that loved it.
I've
never seen it.
Glitter came out
no
on
one I know.
Glitter came out on 9/11. It got a bad rap. It did. That and Beyonce self-titled both came out on... It was a bad... We've talked about this before.
Know,
it is a bad
I
day.
I forgot. Not about 9/11.
9/11 was a bad day for black female pop stars.
Okay. And
and a couple other
else.
A couple other people. But
and everyone else.
But, you know, predominantly Mariah Carey and Beyonce.
Wow. That should be the title of this thing. 9/11 was a bad day for... I'm sorry. This is getting off the rails. Wow.
No, I love when it goes off the rails.
This isn't our most unhinged, though, you guys, because I think...
Yeah. Go back to our episode where we talk about... what was that? A big bag of dildos or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's our season finale,
okay,
to be honest.
Here we go again. Let's go listen to us in season one. Go back to season
one. Listen to season one, and Sarah's a vegan.
Yeah, I'm a vegan. Go back to season one. He's on his epic, okay? We got all the things
not
out there.
Not for long.
Not for long.
Who knows,
not
maybe.
Long a vegan. I was going to start eating your leg. You're like, what the?
That's
I
one
like,
way
pull
to
out a bucket of wings. I'm like, anyway.
Oh my God, what has gotten into us today?
I think we're so comfortable now being on camera doing this that we've resorted back to our audio only selves.
Oh,
do you know
no.
what I mean?
Yes. Well, because our first season, watch season one, was just for the most part either us on Zoom in our living rooms
or
naked in a caftan.
Naked in a caftan.
Mostly naked in a caftan.
Always naked.
Episode one.
Yeah. Wait. That's
good. We're gonna do a caftan episode.
Yeah, we are.
But I think you're right. I mean, I think we're just kind of adapting to a new setup and kind of getting as comfortable as we possibly can be.
Yeah.
Lord help everyone watching
and
listening.
This is episode
episode, however many we are on.
We're
who knows?
27. How are we this? I mean, we're going to be by the end.
Stay tuned.
By the end, that camera's just going to be in my mouth. I'm like, check out this.
Today on I Want to Be a Rich Bitch, Sarah Seeds is having a dental exam live here in the studio.
I think we're just getting more amazing.
We are.
Oh, actually, I talked to somebody about this recently, lately. Something that I've been noticing is everyone is saying, like, from age 20, whatever, all the way up to, you know, 500 years old. I'm not even going to pick a number. But that everyone is saying now, like, yeah, every year I get less and less giving a fuck. And I feel that a lot.
I talk about this sometimes when I'm referencing my 30th birthday to the youngins, because they're talking about, oh, I can't wait till I'm turning 30. Or they're like, oh, I'm terrified to turn 30. I was at my best friend from high school's wedding, who is now happily divorced.
We love her.
And we were in Puerto Rico. The wedding was in Puerto Rico on a beach. It was fantastic. It was just money everywhere.
Sis.
And she had her wedding the day of my 30th birthday. And she sort of did that on purpose because she knew that if it wasn't on that day, I wouldn't have come.
Really?
No, I absolutely would have come. Like, it just made it more fun for us to have like a joint thing.
I think so. What a great gift for a birthday.
I literally remember waking up the next day after my 30th birthday, or maybe it was on, doesn't matter.
Waking up.
I was hungover one way or another.
Yeah, truly.
And just being like, oh,
I'm okay.
This is what not giving a fucking fuck feels like. And I had always kind of thought, to a degree, that I didn't give a fuck.
Yes, truly.
Like I cared about things.
Of course.
But there was, like, always...
You have to care about something.
Of course. But there was always that thing where I was like, whatever. And then that morning, or evening, or the next day, I don't remember which, I woke up and I just remember having this thought of, like, unprompted, just being like, oh, that's what it feels like.
Right, right, right.
And I'm told that happens at 40. I'm told it happens again at 50.
Wow.
And like you said, as time marches on, you just get more and more unraveled from caring. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I've always, and that's really great, because I feel like people get afraid of numbers. Like, it means something
crazy. To be clear, Sarah is over 30. She has hit her 30th birthday.
Yeah. Why are we doing this? Why are we outing me? What are we doing here?
Do retinol.
Yeah. What?
But.
What does that mean? I'm an actor. How dare you? But yeah, no, I think
I'm just kidding. Sarah's 22.
Yeah, and I'm 25. No, but it's true. I think that the older that any of us get, also, like, just more comfortable. Oh, hi. The camera's moving. More comfortable any of us get. Wow, I've never seen that. I'm really excited about the studio now. Now I'm scared again. Now I'm going to go back it's my first episode.
Welcome to the podcast.
No, but I feel like it's something that just happens. I've always been an old soul, so I've always kind of felt that anyway. But, like, now it's really getting to the point where I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't care. Like, you don't have to. I think it's not being afraid is really what it is. We say it's not giving a fuck, but it's really essentially just stop letting fear guide our decision-making.
Because what holds you back?
That's literally
fear and not knowing what's happening. So arguably fear of the unknown, whatever. Yeah. So I mean, the less afraid you become, and I think that's also true specifically for the two of us, not that no one else is doing this, but we constantly are challenging ourselves and doing new things and growing and moving forward. And so as we keep creating things and doing bigger things, the things that we used to do seem like they ain't shit.
No, I know.
And so the fear of doing it again, or the fear of making something else, or doing a bigger project, becomes less and less scary because we're farther away from the first thing that we made, which was terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so here
we are. If it doesn't scare you a little bit, that means it's not challenging you. But don't let the fear be your decision maker. Let the love be your decision maker. Let the belief in yourself, let the belief in others, lean on other people. I mean, all that is just like, And again, as you grow, as you age, as you people come in and out of your life too, you realize, like, who to invest time into, who makes you feel, who uplifts you and who doesn't, which we've talked about on the podcast a lot too, is like surrounding yourself, rich bitch behavior, surrounding yourself with people who uplift you, challenge you, make your goals bigger, greater. And I'm not saying that's everyone's job for you, but like surround yourself with people that are also striving for all of that, you know, because like, I think we do that for each other.
We do.
All the time.
Absolutely.
We're like, yeah, cool. So what else? Let's do it.
Right. How can we make this a bigger problem for ourselves so we can continue to challenge?
Yeah. You know the podcast we had going? Let's make it
let's
so
make
in
it
a studio.
Really hard.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's true for the comment about surrounding yourself with people, like the right people and
right.
whatever. I have found that if you don't feel challenged
yeah.
or you don't feel... Like, if you feel stagnant
yes.
and you're, like, you're standing still and things are still coming your way, but it's just, like, easy, roll off, whatever, I feel like that is always the perfect time to be self-aware enough to recognize that that's happening.
Yes.
And then be like, you know what? Blech, it's time to, like, make something difficult.
Yes.
And, like, challenge
Don't
myself.
Don't be bored.
Because, I stayed in that happy, comfortable place of, like, this is easy. I can do this forever. For entirely too long.
Mm.
And it has only been within the last couple years that I've been like, nope. Time to go.
And see, I've known you since 2021, and
yeah.
you know, I've seen your how you've I
my
don't know.
Meteoric rise.
Absolutely, like a star in the sky.
I am made of star things.
Star dust. Star stuff.
But anyway, speaking of stars,
I'm a Virgo. Does everyone know that?
She's also a vegan.
Yeah, I'm a vegan Virgo virgin.
We need to come up with a game. We need to come up with a game for our listeners to count how many times we say, watch
Ozempic?
Season one, Ozempic, Sarah's
vegan.
A vegan, you're a Virgo.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll throw in some other things.
Yeah, we need to find some.
Look out for the Instagram to see where those things are going to show up, because we're definitely going to do it.
Yeah,
maybe there'll be prizes.
Maybe there's
Who
a
knows?
Bingo.
Maybe there's a bingo. Our next guest, I'm so excited about this
Me
one.
Too.
I cannot believe this person said yes to us. I am so
Love.
Excited. He has a very recognizable face. You will see him if you watch anything on Amazon Prime.
Seriously.
Specifically, this year's kind of, not, I don't want to say dark horse, but it was definitely like the thing that won things that people were like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, no, truly.
And that is Jury Duty.
Jury Duty
on Amazon
guys.
Prime. If you haven't watched it, watch it. It is so lovely.
It is.
And so fun.
It is really fun.
It truly was one of my favorite pieces of media I consumed this year.
And that's on me for not seeing it for a while, because like at first I thought it was more of a reality show, and it's not. It is, but it's not. It's actors. With a real person
right.
who has no idea that
no
he
idea.
Is at, on he's on jury duty. For him, it's just an everyday. And then he's surrounded by actors. I think that is brilliant.
What a farce.
Brillante.
Brillante.
Yeah.
So we are talking about the great Ron Song. He actually, I can't wait to talk to, because he actually had never set out to be an actor at all. He had a totally different career.
Oh, wow.
Happened to take some classes at Second City to help with communication and leading in his job. And I don't have details on how that kind of snowballed into him landing on an Amazon Prime show.
Step.
But I cannot wait to hear it. So come back to us in a few seconds here. We're going to have a Ron Song from Amazon's Jury Duty in short order.
You're so rich.
Pay me.
So, everyone, we already announced that our guest is going to be Ron Song from Jury Duty on Amazon Prime.
Yes, go on.
Just a quick intro to him. He originally studied sculpture and art as an undergraduate at UCSB. And then he went on to study the same thing at the School of Art Institute of Chicago.
Right.
He got sidetracked working in not-for-profit development and advancement work for 20 years, working up to middle management, and then took some classes at Second City in Hollywood to improve listening skills to better support his staff, and left it. And so that kind of leads to my first question for you, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of the pipeline into acting world, or was that just kind of a symptom of how you got involved in doing television?
You know, I think it was the pipeline for me. I didn't realize it at the time. I went to the Second City and, you know, my first class, the instructor, Kevin McGeehan, wonderful human being, asked all of the students, like, raise your hand if you're here to... because your agent or your manager asked you to take an improv class, and 80% of them did. They said, you know, if you heard that this is good for acting, the rest of the class did. And then I was there without my hand. So he asked me, sir, so why are you here? And I said, well, I heard improv was good for managers and listening. And it just started from there. And I realized I loved doing that far more than my job on the daily. There isn't an environment, and correct me if I'm wrong if you've experienced this, but there isn't an environment that I've ever experienced where everyone is rooting for you to do the most difficult thing and knowing that everyone will fail, but still root for you. And it is just fabulous to know that that kind of environment even existed. And
that's profound, so, you know?
Yeah,
that's very profound. Like, that doesn't exist anywhere else.
It doesn't.
Not on the front lines, not in the gymnasium,
I also love the idea, like, I loved doing that, then I liked doing my actual job. And, like, what a dream to be able to transition into doing that, like, as a career. And so that kind of leads to my second question, which is, like, how did jury duty even happen? Like, I just want to fill in some gaps here from, like, your first time at Second City to being on a hit show on Amazon Prime. Like, what was that pipeline for you?
Sure. So one of my, another instructor at the Second City, Allison Bills, another, like, just, there's so many tremendous human beings in improv. It's, like, fabulous. And it's, like, it's disproportionate to the rest of the world. When I met her and she was an instructor of mine, she mentioned to me that there was a show that I might be good at doing. This was a couple of years after I had finished the conservatory. And so I received a random call. I was still working in higher education philanthropy at UC Irvine, and she contacted me and said, you know, she'd heard of the show. Would I want to audition for it? So she sent me some of the information to audition. It went to my manager, who found me after a sketch show at the Second City and came up to me and said, hey, I'd like to rep you. Can I speak with your team? And I was like, so my wife and my children.
Well, my dog.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. HR. Do you want to talk to HR?
Yeah, my team. Yeah, I love that.
So we got to talking, and that's how I entered the and
So you had never auditioned for anything else before that. It was just kind of like hey, I have this
couple of things. Yeah, okay. I did my first TV show was on FX. FXX called Dave.
Oh,
and
okay.
I auditioned for that during the pandemic.
That's Little Dickie's show, right? Dave.
It
Little...
is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love him. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And I got to speak Korean in the show. As an aside, the writer of that episode, his name is Sunny Lee, and the director of the episode was Jake Shire. And the two of them went on to, Sunny Lee went on to create Beef, and wow. Jake Shire went on to direct it with him and work with him on that. So
what a show that.
Well, yeah, right?
It's good. Oh, it's good. Juicy.
Oddly enough, I ran into them at the
I'm a vegan.
Film Independent Spirit Award brunch. And I was able to thank them for giving me my first opportunity to do anything on TV. So yeah, that was just a wonderful moment.
I love that you got started in improv though. That's such a cool thing to get you there. But anyway, keep going, yeah.
Yeah, so going back to it, so she sent me the audition to my manager, and it was essentially to do two characters, one who wanted to do jury duty, and another one who's trying to avoid it. And each of them had to have some kind of expertise in some field that they had listed from column B. And I looked at column B and I noticed that I wasn't an expert at any of those things. So I just chose true crime and said that I figured, okay, in my head, if I can't be an expert, I will just say that I'm an expert and botch it. And the other thing was that I didn't know what to say as any of those characters, so I just let my self-tape roll and didn't say much because I didn't know what to say, and that ended up shaping the character. And so that's how my character came to be on Jury Duty.
I love that because I think there's something really,
That's so
but
funny.
that's so amazing because I'm sure everyone else's tapes were like popping off. Everyone's like really in, they're saying all the things, and you're just like, okay, what a standout, honestly. And that also shows how comfortable you are just being yourself and being on camera. And I think there's something really beautiful about improv. Like, I've been doing improv since middle school. I love improv, and it's only helped me on set, always, to be able to come up with something and to work with others and to interact. And I'm sure that was a really amazing experience, especially on Jury Duty, where everybody's like, I'm essentially, are they, is everyone improving? Was there a script? Was there like, how did you guys scene to scene? I'm just impressed with this.
So there was it's a scripted reality show. So there were scripts, or really essentially they're called story beats, right? We wanted to take our hero on a journey. And so there were interactions with the characters, and each of those interactions were scripted where we would hope to do certain things together, right? Could we build a friendship? And then from there, can we show that this individual and another person had interest in each other, like Noah and Jeannie? Could we get Ken to lose money to Ronald, right? To our hero. And what would that reaction look like? And so originally it was scripted that the game that we would play was called Beans, because the writer of that who came up with that was talking to me and said, Beans, just kong, which is beans in Korean. He's like, that just sounds funny. Like, can we do something with that? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Like pinto beans and garbanzo, like whatever, right? Chickpeas. We could
So many
just
beans. Yeah, many beans.
do so many things. But
Fire.
we
Yeah.
couldn't land on the actual game. So I thought about this for a little bit and said, you know, I have this game at home. It's been in my family. My parents gave it to me. You know, 3,000-year-old Korean game called Yut. We play it in the Lunar New Year, or on the Lunar New Year and the Solar New Year, and that family gatherings and teams. Can I bring that in? Because then I know how to manipulate the game. I know how to the rules of the game, and we can establish that in a way that could make sense.
Right.
And we did. We ended up playing that game. The lawyers came in and thought, and you know, evaluated whether or not there was a copyright infringement, and there wasn't. So we were able
On
to
a
use that
3,000-year-old
on a
game.
3,000-year-old game.
Yeah, on a
Yeah.
3,000-year-old game. Yeah.
Good. So
So that's what we played.
imagine if they would have found something that was
somebody was
like,
like, I copy
actually,
wrote
we
this.
found this copyright from 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, songs from the 50s are open season, but not a
But not
3,000-year-old
this
Korean
game.
game. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah.
It might be in public domain. I don't know. Maybe it's on the verge.
Maybe you make a TV show out of this game. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. That's amazing because it's like you once you're in the room, it reminds me of like the game, you know, when we talk about it in improv, like the game. It's like once you're inside the restrictions, so to speak, it actually opens up so many possibilities. And I love that like
Yeah.
within your character, you came up with a game about beans. It's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, I
So
love it.
that's how, I mean, it was scripted, and to those story beats, none of the dialogue was really scripted.
Amazing.
So however way we interacted, we had to just you know, improvise all of our dialogue. Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite things about the show is that it is essentially reality TV,
Right.
but it took it to such a level that, because I do not watch reality TV. Like, I refuse to watch it. I actively do not watch it. But there was something about the way that this was set up and the way that this was executed and the way that it ended. I'm not going to
Oh,
spoil
yeah.
it for anyone who hasn't seen it. That just was like the most exciting thing I've seen on
Yeah.
television in so long. Like, Ron, this is in my top like 5 to 10 favorite things I've seen in the last couple of years. It is,
oh my gosh,
absolutely,
well, thank you.
It's truly one of my favorite things. I'm sure you get asked stuff about this all the time, so I want to focus on the things that you that mean something to you,
yes,
outside of television, which of course we've talked a lot about so far, is education. And so yeah, to kind of go down this line of conversation that we were going down, when you were at your original alma mater, which is USCB, and then also the School of the Art in Chicago, do you remember, mm-hmm, off the top of your head, like what your tuition was at either of those places?
Yeah, I think when I was at UC Santa Barbara, my tuition went up. And it was dramatic, because I think it was like 1,000%, but it was, you know, or something ridiculous. Like the percentage was crazy, but it went from about $1,400 per quarter to about $3,000 or $4,000 per quarter. So, literally graduated with about $4,000 worth of debt. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, in today's dollars.
Today's
nothing.
It's like, that's a
God. I wish I had that much debt.
Yeah, yeah. And so you could do summer jobs. You can go paint houses. You can do other things to help supplement your tuition at the time. Mm-hmm. And the kind of the idea that you can bootstrap your higher education was really possible.
Yeah.
So that's how I got through it.
I know I graduated college with like over 30,000, and that's been paid off. But that was like in my late 20s, I managed to finally do that. But that was so difficult. It took a whole 10 years. And like a lot of people nowadays, it's double that when they graduate. It's triple that. I know some of my counterparts went to NYU when I couldn't go because we couldn't afford it. I got it. I couldn't go. They have like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're not doctors. They're actors. Right. What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go to college.
There
I was like,
things,
forget
right,
this.
That, oh, yeah. I'm
no,
sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I just said I never went to college. I was like, forget this. Not in the cards.
I think there. You know, higher education. The promise of higher education in some ways is upward mobility. Right. This is where you can advance your life and maybe create generational wealth and so on and so forth. Right. After that, the dream of becoming part of the middle class was also to own a home, a starter home. And those two things now for generations to come and for current generations are completely out of reach because the cost of housing, which has been privatized, there are lots of, you know, private equity firms that are purchasing single family homes across the country. And higher education, which is being corporatized, right? When you think about private equity also entering the leadership sphere of higher education boards, we're getting to a place now where those two things have become, they're chasing prestige and to such a degree that we are saddling those generations of students that are coming out of here with insurmountable debt. And it's tragic.
I kind of want to propose the idea space to you that if you were in charge, what do you think the solution to this is?
Yeah, in terms of how schools are run now and how much.
Yeah, fantastic question. I think schools have to chase the promise of an academic future and train students in intellectual rigor. Right, and academic rigor, so that they're and critical thinking. So those are important skills that are going to create the broadest and largest engaged civic population. Right, but you know, if you think about the kind of the trail of funds that go into higher education and the never-ending sort of race to achieve prestige, that will always increase the cost of tuition dramatically, well beyond the cost of living increases that we've seen. But if we think about where the loans are being managed, which is really Fannie Mae and
that so, bitch.
Sally Mae, Freddie Mae, Fannie Mae. They're all two named Southern women or something. I don't know why they're all. I don't know why that's the way it is, but.
And now that the federal government is in charge of maintaining those loans, and you know, if you think about the Biden administration thinking about that and taking steps to be able to sort of forgive some student loan, with some policies, I think that that's a fantastic first step. But when we really think about this, it has to be a two-tier process to try to think about legislation that looks at the trying to remove on the academic side the corporatization of academics, to really go back to a place where you focus on the academics and you know, student life and all of those things that have become far more important in terms of engagement and those metrics.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, how do we invest more in that, in the education, and less in the sort of the artifice that surrounds higher ed, right? That creates that prestige environment.
Yeah.
We don't all have to go to a country club, is what I'm saying.
Educational systems shouldn't be profit centers, right? I mean, that's like the thing. It's like, that's what they're doing, is they're money making, you know, when in reality it's here to educate, you know? So I totally agree. Yeah. And I think the Biden, where they're helping some folks with their loans, I think that's an awesome thing. But I also think it's putting a Band-Aid on an issue that is the schools themselves. You know, we can help these folks coming out of college, but...
And I also feel that there is a way for the school to profit and make money.
Yes.
And also have everyone be properly educated.
Yes.
And get their money's worth of an education going to that school without being saddled with crippling amounts of debt for the rest of their adult lives.
Yeah.
There has to be a way.
Right.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. To add on, when we think about the student loan debt crisis as being really the largest looming debt crisis ahead of us, outside of mortgages, it's the second largest debt that Americans hold. And when that's, you know, and the stipulation with student loan debt is that it doesn't, you can't declare bankruptcy and get rid of it, right? It is stuck with you. So the biggest challenges are prestige and understanding at a certain point when the cost of an education is right sized. And I don't know exactly how to express that other than thinking about the future of the students that we are saddling.
So, aside of like legislative action, what do you feel like, in your opinion, are some ways that students now, whether they are pursuing college from high school, they're halfway through their college career, they're considering going to grad school, continuing education, what are some ways that you feel students can gain some upward mobility and traction in their field, knowing that legislation is not immediate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are three things. If you are in high school and you're thinking about colleges, I know in California, the vast majority, I think all of the community colleges in California are free. Mm. And so to do your general education requirements in community college, if you're a self-starter, if you're someone who is not chasing prestige, but you are wanting to get rid of these large classes, because at a research institution like UC Santa Barbara or UCLA, you'll have to take these huge survey classes. There are hundreds and 800, 1,000 people in a class, right? If you don't want that, then go to a community college. Get your general education requirements out of the way. It will unburden you of 2 years of tuition. Your transfer rates and your acceptance rates of being a transfer student from a community college to a four-year institution and then continuing your degree there are much higher than if you were coming straight out of high school also. So there's a better chance for you to get into UCLA, you know, a great four-year university. If you do your general education requirements at a community college and transfer, and parents don't have to choose and chase prestige, because the second aspect to that is your undergraduate degree doesn't fucking matter.
Hey,
where you go to school
for the people in the because, back. Yes.
You know, because the idea here is a hiring manager, if they see you, you have the right skills and they want to hire you, they're going to hire you. And the only thing that the HR department will do is contact your university to verify that you actually went to school there and received your bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. That is it.
Okay, Ron, okay, thank you so much for this commentary. This is so fun. Another thing that you mentioned to us that you really, really enjoy is Antique Roadshow, which is something I have been watching with my grandmother since I was a literal child.
Yes.
I love this show so much.
My mom's favorite show, straight up.
I literally follow them on
TikTok. It is my favorite.
It's the best. I literally follow them on TikTok, and I'm obsessed.
I love how Ron's face just lit up, and he's like, it is... my favorite.
My favorite.
Like, it's literally like a type of wine or like
yes.
something.
And I have done some of my own antique road showing myself. I literally have two things that are my prized possessions that are in my apartment. One is a World War I Army issued trunk that I found in a thrift shop in Louisville, Kentucky. I paid $60 for it. And it has like the guy's travel tags to Taiwan on it.
Wow.
It has like his information, his name is painted on it, and everything.
I love that.
It is a piece of shit, and
oh
I love
God.
It so
I love that,
much.
Though.
The other thing that is my actual prized possession is the steamer trunk that my ancestors, like 100 and some years ago, came over to the United States with from Eastern Europe. It is in my apartment. My grandmother gave it to me when I was a teenager. And
it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It is like embossed
up.
Tin and leather. It's worth nothing, I guarantee you, but it is worth so much to me, and I love it so, so much.
My mom has family china that's like, and teacups that are like all different types. Like there's some sets, but some of them are just like a teacup with a flower. As you drink, you see more of the flower.
Or like it's like, I love stuff like
gold
that.
Painted. What? And I love stuff like that.
With that said, Ron,
okay, anyway,
we are going
this
to play.
One's gorge, though. We love her.
We are going to play a game called Pay Your Way. And
yes.
I'm going to list five different items from that were featured on Antique Roadshow. So, you know, they've been on the television show. And you need to tell me if they are more, less, or equal to one semester at your alma mater at UCSB, which currently their tuition, according to the U.S. News and World Report,
ding, ding,
is $54,530 per year.
$54,000.
So, with that said, our first item here, Sarah, if you would like to take that one off.
I'd love to talk about our first item. Come on down. Our first item is a grotesque jug with weird faces on it that someone bought for $300 at an estate sale. How much do you think that was worth? Do you think it was worth less or more than the $54,000 tuition that your alma mater?
You know, the uglier it is, I want it to be worth more. So more.
Wrong. It was worth $0. It was,
shame.
It was
shame.
A ceramics class project by a high school student in the 1970s. And when the show aired in January, the artist got a call from an old friend that her high school art creation was on TV. She gave up art in college and now trains horses.
And I can see why based on the photo that I'm looking at, I wish you could
oh
see
my
it.
God.
It's
we'll
very,
send you the photo.
We're going to put the photo up on the screen
yes.
so everyone can see what it is. It's giving very hocus pocus with the book and the eye, and it's like the Seeing Eye book.
Imagine it's invaluable to anyone who thinks it's the creepiest thing. It's going to start curses for you.
Yes. I'll put my cat's
invaluable.
Ashes in it. Yeah, I love this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, mm-hmm. Item number two. An original Peanuts comic strip collection from the 1950s.
Yeah, original Peanuts comic collection.
More than my tuition.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding.
Absolutely. That went for auction at $450,000.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
The owner began collecting Peanuts comics for her son, who then became a fan, and he got some signed lithographs from Charles Schulz from the early comic collection. He got some one-of-a-kind pieces directly from the 1950s.
Yeah, it's great.
Yay.
Yay, that's
next,
a good one.
Next item.
Third one. Okay, ding, ding, ding. Door number three. Louis Comfort Tiffany's Furnaces Table Lamp. So it's a Tiffany's Louis Comfort Tiffany. Louis Comfort Tiffany. I have no idea who that is.
It's a Tiffany's lamp circa 1925.
1925, yeah.
More, less, or equal to current college tuition at UCSB.
Less.
Hmm.
That is correct.
Yes.
It went for auction for $15,000. It was found at a garage sale that the owner got for free. She wanted to cut the cord off of it, but was advised not to until they found out what it was and what it was worth.
Why would she want to cut the cord off of a lamp?
She wanted to do something.
What's wrong with her?
Okay, I don't remember the whole story.
Good luck. Yikes.
But it's still $15,000 for something that's free.
That's incredible. That's a good find.
That's a great return on investment right there. A great ROI, as they say in the
business. I know this is my problem. I know it's me, but I'm still trapped in, like, why would you want to keep the lamp but cut the cord? It won't ever light. I'm sorry. Anyway, we're going to move on to number four.
Who knows? Who knows? Okay. Number four is a casino drink coaster that was signed by Michael Jordan.
Mm. MJ.
My tuition.
Ding, ding, ding.
You're doing really well here, Ron.
You're really good. Okay, it's $3,000. $3,000. Basically, the guest lost to Michael Jordan in blackjack, but he still walked away a winner with his MJ-signed casino coaster.
Ooh.
Ooh.
We have to compare how much he lost.
I know. That's what I'm thinking.
What did he lose? Was this an ROI or no?
Yeah. And Michael Jordan is notoriously does not give a fuck. So I'm sure he took his money.
Absolutely.
To the cleaners.
Okay. Our fifth and final item, Ron. More, less, or equal to one semester at UCSB, which is $54,530. So your fifth and final item is a 19th century Navajo Ute blanket.
Way more.
Oh.
Ding, 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 ding.
He's literally almost got a clean sweep.
Oh my God, Ron, you should go on a game show. You're doing really well here.
You should be on television. Wow. Yes. It's the first Phase Chief's blanket dating back to the 1800s. It was gifted to the owner by the legendary, though problematic, Kit Carson.
$500,000.
Half a milli for that.
For a blanket.
May or may not have smallpox. Okay.
May or may not have smallpox. Anyway, this has been a round of Pay Your Way with Ron Song I Want to Be a Rich Bitch.
Let's come up with a song really quick.
Pay your way.
Put the money on the table. Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay,
Ron,
wow,
this
Ron.
Has been so much fun. Thank you so much
You're
for joining
angel.
Us. This has been.
Oh, thank you. It's been so much fun for me, sitting in my car. I just, I love this.
Well, thank you so much, Ron. It was a pleasure to meet you. I'm so glad to have met you. It's fantastic and great work on the show.
Great work
on the show. Everything else that's coming your way.
Everybody, if you get a chance, log into Amazon Prime and watch Jury Duty. You'll see this gentleman right here, Ron Song. Thank you all for joining us on I Want to Be a Rich Bitch.
And before we let him go, where can we find him? Do you have any social media you can share with
me? Oh, my God. Look at me being terrible at my job.
Yeah. It's fine.
You can find me on Instagram at SongRonSong.
Song Wrong Song.
Song Wrong Song.
And now,
thank you everybody for watching.
Give me the dollars. Put the money on the table.
Pay me.
Thank you, God. That's a wrap.
You're so rich.
Pay me.